It's Marketplace Tech for November 18th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Square's technology gained traction early on by making point-of-sale purchases for small merchants super easy. The company plans to start trading tomorrow as SQ on the New York Stock Exchange with a possible valuation of $6 billion. It is a tricky moment in the markets and for payment technologies, though. Brendan Miller is an analyst at Forrester. Brendan, Square's got competition on both sides?
They really kind of compete in two different spaces. In the payment side of the business, they really compete with the traditional payment processors out there, companies like First Data, Vantiv, Heartland Payments, Global Payments. These are large, sometimes international companies that process payments for companies like Target and Walmart, all the way down to local businesses. All these small merchants across the country are upgrading from their standalone terminals to these new integrated point-of-sale systems. And so you have a whole new opportunity or a whole new market developing around point of sale systems. And so you have companies like ShopKeep, Revel Systems, Vend, and Clover, which is actually owned by First Data. They're all competing for the point of sale business. And so you have two really strong pressure points here of they have to compete with the traditional large payment players, as well as these new and upcoming, a lot of times mobile-based or tablet-based point of sale systems.
Are there opportunities for the company in the marketplace right now? Where can it grow?
Square has kind of pulled the market to make it a much better experience for the merchant. And so I think that is one reason merchants are really attracted to them.
How is going public going to change what happens at Square? This is kind of an interesting time to be doing an IPO.
There's a major convergence around cloud computing, tablet computing, big data, and Square is really taking advantage of that convergence of all those trends. And so, you know, I think it's a good time for them to be looking at this IPO and doing this IPO.
Brendan Miller is an analyst at Forrester. Brendan, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
While we're talking payments, America's transition to chip-in-card technology has not been cheap. Banks and credit card companies have spent a lot of money on issuing new cards. Merchants have also had to fork over money for new card readers, and that has led to new tensions between merchants and financial institutions over the cost of the transition. David Robinson is the publisher of the Nilson Report newsletter.
If a merchant has upgraded their terminal, the status quo continues. The merchant is not liable for fraud. That was the same as it was when we were using magnetic stripes. So what that means is that the merchant had to upgrade the point of sale terminal, spend that extra money buying the new fancier hardware, but they gained nothing.
But the banks had to issue new cards.
The banks definitely had cost involved in sending us a plastic card with a chip in it versus plastic card with a magnetic stripe. Probably added the better part of a dollar. Now, when you multiply a dollar by every cardholder in the United States, that starts to add up. Obviously, it's billions of dollars. The card issuers are definitely going to benefit from the expense that they incurred. You know, they spent some money to fight counterfeit fraud, and that's a good thing for them. But again, the merchants didn't gain anything because if they were reading the magnetic stripe and now they are reading the chip with their point of sale terminal, they had no liability either before or after putting in that new device.
David Robertson is publisher of the Nilson Report. David, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Ben.
Each week over the next several weeks, we are bringing you special content alongside our new podcast called Codebreaker. Our first season asks one question of a different kind of technology in every episode. The one question, is it evil? Our second episode out today is about the increased availability of adult content online. It's had a big impact on the business. You may remember last month, Playboy announced it would stop publishing photos of nude women online and in the magazine starting next year. I recently went to talk to Katie Thompson. She's emerging technology editor at our podcast partners, Tech Insider, and I asked her about this. The move has been big, but it's hard to quantify.
The number of videos being viewed on porn sites is more than Netflix, Amazon, YouTube combined. It's pretty, these streaming services can't even touch it.
Why is it hard to pin down?
I spoke with an analyst who's actually studies the porn industry, and he couldn't even give me a number of websites But in general, it seems that there is definitely over a million, could be anywhere up to 5 million.
And increasingly, there's like mobile traffic.
Yeah, and the mobile traffic is really interesting because this is something that has just sort of exponentially grown ever since everyone started getting these mobile devices. People feel like on their mobile devices, they have more privacy. So you may not be logging into a porn site at work on your work computer, but you might have your mobile device and you're able to access it that way. I sort of realized that this was becoming a huge trend. Last year, I was in a cab and I forgot my phone and I didn't have directions. And I asked the cab driver to borrow his phone.
Oh, no.
So it just really goes to show, though, that like this is something people are doing at all times. This is what my cab driver is doing in his free time on his phone. I dropped the phone.
I don't blame you.
Katie Thompson there from Tech Insider. You can get Codebreaker on iTunes or your usual podcasting app, or unlock all of the episodes of this season early. You can get more info on that at codebreaker.codes. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.